Well, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, David.
And welcome, everybody, back to the Daily Evolver. And today we have a hot story. I think you would actually say that Representative Anthony Weiner certainly has been in the news. And we're going to look at that story, but look at it really in the larger context of Integral. And what is Spirit calling us to do here? What's Spirit up to as it relates to power and sex? And mostly men, I think we can make that argument. So I'm going to be very interested. But let's just start with Anthony and this latest story. But it's latest in a long line on both sides of the aisle. And here we are again, a man fallen in a certain sort of way. So right. Let's just start with him. What is it about his story that particularly interests you or opens this larger conversation?
Who can look at that press conference that he did yesterday and not be somewhat heartbroken? Maybe it's part of it is that I sympathize with him politically and I kind of like the guy and I hate to see him fall. I'm sure his political enemies are jubilant. And I would guess that his career is pretty much over. But we'll see how that goes. Certainly, it's just another in a long line of examples where people act out sexually. And this is actually nothing new. And I think, need to recognize that and realize that all of us, I mean, this is where I love Buddhism, because it says that when you see somebody in pain, you want to exchange self with other. You want to see, so that could be me. And you see that, you know, I was making a joke the other day with a friend of mine that, you know, this is where the teachings of karma come in handy, is that all of us will have a lifetime where our last name is Weiner. We have to sort of take that into account. And that's actually the most excruciating part, is that we have videotape and this whole week of lies that he told. And, of course, Bill Clinton told lies, and Newt Gingrich,
and Arnold
Vitter, and Schwarzenegger, and John Edwards, and Ensign, and all of these politicians did. And, of course, they do. Every stage of development has had to accommodate the fact that we are, evolutionarily speaking, animals. You know, we are living in these human bodies that are vessels for eros. As evolutionaries and integralists, we actually want to get in touch with that erotic urge. It's like Whitman said, urge and urge and urge. Always the procreant urge of the world that's just lighting us up. And so every stage of development has had to accommodate the fact that people are looking to, you know, have sex with each other. It's one of the things that's part of what moves things forward. And, you know, back in the days of tribes and red, you know, this was just hedonism, sexual freedom in wild kind of animalistic way was the way of things.
And much more necessary because they're populating the tribe.
Yeah, I mean, there's an intelligence to it.
The kids
Absolutely.
Were dying and the yes. tribe would die out unless there were more children.
Absolutely.
So different
the more sex,
impulse,
the better. Yeah. The more children, the better. And different, you know, tribal structures had different ways of doing that. But we were maximizing this way with polygamy. And, you know, the polygamy is actually, in a sense, a sort of a red energetic that's civilized into amber or blue, where we have traditionalism. Traditionalism is really the one structure of consciousness that really looked to subvert sex, create an ideal where we have long-term, monogamous, lifelong marriages with one person. And even that didn't work. Yeah. It's one of the ways that we civilized that sexual chaos and hedonism. And so we have all these rules of sexual propriety, and that's the Victorian age. But even then, on the side, there was a lot going on. So in a way, I think what all of these sexual scandals, and Weiner being the latest of them, makes us realize is that this is just something that society has to accommodate. And not only does society have to accommodate it, but we have to accommodate it within our own mind bodies. I mean, that's always the move, is we want to see what's happening out there and then see how what's happening out there is actually what's happening in here, in my own mind body. And so I notice my own struggles to civilize my sexual impulses. And I noticed it among my friends. And I have sympathy for that because, you know, it's kind of God's joke But we're in this world with this body of, you know, juice and flesh and blood and, you know, genitals and other people. And it is a very, very powerful thing, you know. On a personal level, I have great sympathy. On a professional level, right, it's a whole other story in a way, because you realize that there he was texting pictures of himself, and some of the pictures showed his face. And did he really think that that was going to be something that he could get away with over time? You think of Bill Clinton and his serial affairs. You think of, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and a lot of these guys, John Edwards.
Tiger Woods,
you know. Yeah, with these serial affairs.
And at the top of their game, this is where
absolutely,
I really like that you're bringing into this human condition, but now we go into this notion of power and this notion of notoriety. So now you're an attractor, right? Now people are magnetized to you, project all over you. Whatever. Yes. Want to be close to you and all. And that's not an excuse for what happens. But this is the game that anybody that has had any notoriety, this isn't, doesn't, you don't need to be a representative in Congress or the top sports star in the world to get this. I mean, we all get this at work. We get this in our own little lives, that right, something happens and somebody gets attracted to us. And the question is, what are we going to do with that?
I hear that this is put forth, that it's powerful men that are acting out here. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that it's just not men in general, and actually women too. When you look at the percentage of people who have affairs, it's, you know, very high. The people, number of people who have divorces, 50%+. And so I'm not so sure it's just powerful men. It's just that powerful men are the ones that we look at. I think it's significant evolutionarily in terms of culture, is that at this stage of the game, culturally, we're moving into what I would describe as a post-privacy world. And that is that we can no longer assume that we can have, particularly if you're in a public life, if you're in a public situation, you can't have a private life that is off limits. And so we look at what happened with Anthony Weiner. We look at what happened to all of these guys we're talking about. And if you want to get to the very top, we go back to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, who acted out in the Oval Office, and we know every gruesome detail of him and Monica Lewinsky and the dress and the cigar and all of this stuff, and it's excruciating. And we know all of that. And the downside of that is that it distracted the country for 2 years. You know, and that, you know, policy really took second shrift to this scandal that we just went on in slow motion. And, you know, we forgave, and Bill Clinton's an elder statesman and all of that good stuff. But if you look back at history and you go back to Lyndon Johnson, was it, we know he had many affairs. John Kennedy had affairs in the White House with some very sketchy women. I mean, it was well known. There was a sort of a conspiracy of silence among the media at that time. And so that's a different situation. And you go back to Franklin Roosevelt, and you realize that many people in the country didn't know that Franklin Roosevelt was in a wheelchair. I mean, that's the, can you imagine that kind of privacy? He was elected president 3 times, and a lot of people didn't know he was in a wheelchair. I mean, it's just shocking. You go back to Thomas Jefferson. By today's standards, Thomas Jefferson would be in jail. He would be a serial rapist. He would be guilty of sexual harassment of somebody in his employ, only in this case, they, you know, owned them. Yes. He was a slave. I'm not sure that there isn't progress in all of this. What spirit's doing in evolution is actually just requiring us to grow up and get real about who we are, and get real about the fact that we have these juicy sexual bodies, and that, as always, the relationships that we have with each other are evolving.
This is a really interesting notion, this notion of privacy. And so I think it's a Buddhist practice, I think, that where someone said, speak as if everybody gets to hear every word.
Right.
So for those of us, all of us, that you start into that, oh, that person, this, that, and the other thing. Or what if every single word that you said was actually known by everybody? That's an interesting practice, because then you would start to moderate. And a reasonable person would. You would start to say, all right, so I'm going to train myself. I'm going to mature here. I don't have to go off on somebody. In fact, I'm just not going to make that my practice or carry on gossip or be a part of all of that. And what's so fascinating, I mean, for Anthony is that he's one of the younger politicians that was really making news of Twitter. He's a guy of this new social media. And the irony is that if anybody should have understood that at some point you can't be sending pictures out on Twitter of that, it should have been him,
right?
Because he understood with the social media. It wasn't some old guy that said, gee, I didn't realize it when I punched the button. It sent it to everybody. That whole notion of maturity, I mean, that whole thing of what if each of our private lives, all of our secret lives, was now public, would I act differently? And I think you're making the argument that you probably would.
Right. Well, I think two things would happen. So this is just as a thought experiment. What's the ideal situation here for human beings to live with each other in the most evolved way? What's it going to look like in the sacred world to come? And I think there's going to be a couple things. One is, and it's a great thought experiment to do what you just said. Imagine that everybody knew everything about each other's lives. I mean, that's just, first of all, it's a shocking idea. And it's one that, you know, evokes fear in most of us because we all have secret lives. We all have things that we've done, things that we continue to do. Mm-hmm. This is where this Wiener thing, I look at him and my heart broke. There but for the grace of God.
Right.
I haven't done that particular thing, but I don't want my private life and my foibles publicized. In the sacred world to come, yeah, I think if we know that everybody knows everything, we do moderate our behavior in a certain way. There's a certain container of civil behavior that we would want to meet. On the other hand, I think society will have to grow to accommodate who we are and to take another look at this one ideal that we have right now that we hold up, which is this ideal of lifelong, committed, monogamous relationship. And anything other than that is a failure. So most of us are failures. Most of us are divorced. Most of us have had, you know, multiple relationships. Many of us have cheated on our partners. Many of us have cheated openly. Many of us have cheated behind the scenes. If you really look at couples and really scratch the surface of couples, people are making all kinds of private accommodations for each other with pornography and affairs or whatever it might be that nobody wants that publicized. But in the sacred world to come, we're going to have to somehow accommodate this and to realize that some people are not suited for lifelong monogamy. Some people actually are, and that's also interesting. There are some people who can absolutely do that, but it's not everybody. And that's the beautiful thing about, I think, continued evolution, is that we realize, and this is a line from Emerson, that each church has a congregation of one. That is, each person on this face of this earth is different. And their sexuality and their emotionality and their ability to connect and what their dreams are as unique as your face. There's no two faces exactly alike. And so we'll have, I think, and we're developing it de facto, and there's still this idea that lifelong monogamy is the ideal, but if you look around at the, you know, the people that we all aspire to or the role models that we have, there's very few people who are actually doing that. And we're all sort of working on how is it that we can have these juicy lives of real connection and, you know, sexual adventure and experimentation and still raise children and still be honest with each other and still lead decent lives in a way that we care about each other and we're not exploiting each other and we're all doing it consensually and as adults. We're nowhere near making this work in an ideal way, but we're making great progress.
I want to stay with what Spirit up to here. So we can say on the one hand, well, if everybody knows everything, then I'm going to moderate my behavior. So there's a certain maturity in that.
Yeah,
right. Of course. I mean, then we do it every day. I mean, we fail and hopefully we come back to center and we kind of go, all right, so maybe I'll be a little bit better next time and not go down that hole.
Well, you know, we're wild men or women in our homes and, you know, in our own interiors. And we walk out the front door and we smile and we're all civilized.
Right.
Hello. Right. You know, that's not bad. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So let's just take the media for a second, because we now have this 24/7 always on media. And I think, I mean, at least in me, there's this reaction to, you know, do we have to give this much airtime to this? Because as you pointed out, is it distracting us, obviously, from the more important things? So what you've said all along, though, in every single one of our conversations is, this is evolution moving forward. Instead of reacting to and say, well, you know, if I was running the media or issue an edict, I would say no more stories like that. And you would probably say, no, those stories actually have a purpose
yes.
in the overall chaos. So yeah. why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's just an acknowledgement of what is. I mean, when you talk about what is important, of course, the debt limit's important. The war in Afghanistan is important. So we have a choice of paying attention to those or paying attention to Anthony Weiner's meltdown. It's not an either-or thing. But we can't help ourselves. This is Shakespeare in action in modern times. And we cannot help but see, to just be fascinated and riveted by other human beings who are in extreme situations. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think that's how we learn about, you know, what it is to actually fall from the heights to the depths. This is drama. This is literature. This is art. This is what has riveted human beings for centuries and millennia, is that we pay attention to the ups and downs and the foibles, the triumphs and the failures of the powerful. Mm-hmm. That's how we tell the stories of our lives.
So some of the cultural maturity that you're talking about, because we've been talking about politicians, and certainly there is no lack of failure there. We say this, you know, rock stars and actors and who else is out there with that kind of power and that kind of attraction. And then the big one for us then is spiritual teachers, right?
Right.
So why don't you talk a little bit about the maturity of the differences there? Because in a certain sense, we always say, well, rock stars are rock stars, right? And you kind of go, well, you know, that whatever that behavior was.
They're supposed to do
they're
that.
They're supposed to do that. And we actually celebrate. They say, hey, yeah. You know, the guys are all sitting there going, yeah, yeah, yeah. Movie actors probably about the same. I mean, you just kind of mm-hmm. go, oh, they're just nuts,
yeah.
right? But politicians, and particularly spiritual teachers now, we have other expectations
yes.
for them. So is it part of our maturity process, do you think, to get to a point where we don't trigger so much to those kinds of things? Because of course, spiritual teachers are going to have this issue. Of course, politicians are going to have this issue. There's, you know, they yeah. just will.
No, you're right. I mean, there's a certain hierarchy there. Yeah. So we have, you know, sports stars and rock stars that, you know, we figure they're supposed to have sex on the bus with multiple groupies. You know, that's the way that is. And we move up to actors, and they have good old Liz Taylor, 8 marriages, you know. She was a pioneer. And then, but when you do move into politicians, then all of a sudden we're in a role model area.
Yeah, we expect them to be different.
Yeah, exactly.
Or right? Or we say it's worse.
Yeah.
And then because it's them. And you
have good families yeah. and they're, you know, have propriety. And, you know, for most of us, that matters. I mean, I don't deny or pretend that what Weiner did or Clinton did or Ensign did or any of these people, Schwarzenegger, doesn't represent something about their character that voters ought to take into account. I mean, it's people are going to do that. It's okay that they do that. And then you move into spiritual teachers. Mm. And that is a whole new category yeah. because these are the people that, two things going on. One is that we see them as idealized. You know, these people are living the lives that I want to live. And secondly,
closer to their true self, if we had to say it.
Yeah, yes, exactly. They're more enlightened. Mm-hmm. You know, they're living in the space that I want to live in. And then the second thing is they can transmit that to me. That's why we hang out with more enlightened people. We recognize their enlightenment. This is where Integral really helps, because Integral shows us that spiritual development is a line of development that is actually, in a way, jaw-droppingly independent from other lines of development. So it's independent of cognitive development, and it's independent of moral development. It's independent of somatic development, and, you know, interpersonal development. But we do find these people who are spiritually, you know, off the charts, and there's no end to the problems. And we see this in our community, and we see this in spiritual communities, you know, throughout the world, that spiritual teachers, both financially and sexually exploiting their students, is a very oft-told story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a problem with that, and you know, a lot of people are hurt by that, and spiritual teachers are brought down, and they, you know, the mighty fall there, and that, you know, that whole Shakespearean thing continues. But here's what I'd say that is maybe a little bit on the positive side, is that we're going to have to figure out how we can deal with the sexual urge and the erotic urge in a way that is more mature than we are now. And I don't doubt that perhaps there are now, and I think certainly there will be as we continue to grow up, containers of spiritual practice and spiritual transmission between teachers and students that include sexual contact. Mm-hmm. This requires two very evolved people, mm-hmm. or three or four, or I don't know what. Mm-hmm. But in the sacred world to come, we will, in my opinion, and who knows, you know, I'm just spouting off here, but we will have containers where sexual contact, sexual activity, the conscious working with sexual and erotic energy will be basically part of the spiritual education. Mm-hmm. There have been subcultures in the past, and tantric teachers and that sort of thing.
It goes way back.
Yeah, exactly. Where, you know, even temple prostitution, that sort of thing. I mean, that was lower level expressions of that. That was sort of pre-traditional. But this will be post-traditional, post-modern and post-postmodern, mm-hmm. where we will, you know, find ways to actually engage this really juicy, powerful energy in a way that is further enlightenment instead of shame and guilt.
What I'm hearing you say really is this word, because you haven't used the word, but it's really a practice.
Yes.
In a way. And this is certainly a conversation that's been up in the integral community for the last 3 or 4 months. Lots written on it, spoken mm-hmm. about, lots of perspectives. Mm-hmm. The one thing that sort of rings true to me in all of this conversation in terms of this cultural or this evolutionary maturity is that it certainly is one way that you can move into a practice as long as those agreements are in place. I mean, that's, I think that the thing we charge so much off of is, and we see this in all of ourselves, whether it's little white lies or it's big lies, it's the deception.
Yeah.
We know when we're manipulating a situation, or at least we hope we do, you know, as we get older and you just catch yourself and you choose not to or whatever. That's usually a sign of maturity. But ultimately, if you were going to go teach your student, as an example, that if that is the practice, it certainly is a way to challenge the entire shadow side, which is a word we use a lot. Mm-hmm. Even just simple things about jealousy. I mean, can I really get in and challenge my jealousy about this? And you would do that as an intentional practice, not as some sort of frivolous lifestyle where you just say, well, I'm just sleeping around and, you know, whatever. So yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's conscious sexual expression and there's unconscious, you know. So when we're talking about, you know, moving into more conscious tantric sexual / spiritual practice, mm-hmm. it would absolutely have to be above board. It would have to be that all parties knew what they were doing. And I think it's coming. Mm-hmm. I think it's here in its nation form. And, you know, many of us are roadkill on the highway mm-hmm. of continued enlightenment here. And that's okay. That's what we're supposed to be. It's just our lives. Yeah. We're just here to do our best. When I think of somebody like Wiener and even Clinton, you can't look at them without thinking about their scarlet letter, mm-hmm. you know, about their shame. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be a very powerful spiritual practice for them. I mean, that's got to be something where they actually are the guys who we found out about. We're all doing something, but they're the guys we know about. And this is where I think as evolutionaries and spiritual practitioners, this is an opportunity for practice for us. Because, you know, and I've been guilty of it myself. I look at Wiener, you know, my friends, we've chuckled his name. All I mean, it's what? Just, I mean, it's just too perfect for the comedians and all of this stuff. But, and fair enough, whatever, that's what we do. But let's also, as practitioners, just realize we want to be aware when we're projecting our shadow onto other people. So we look at Anthony Wiener and we say, how stupid could he be? All right, so red flag, not even a red flag, it's just that is an opportunity to say, so how am I being stupid? How am I trying to project my own stupidity on him, or my own, you know, lack of, quote, character, or my own misbehavior, or my own unacceptable impulses onto these people so that I can feel better? And we want to watch that. We want to just be careful. We don't know. We're going to do it, but we want to notice that. Mm-hmm. We want to notice that we're doing that, because that helps us wake up mm-hmm. and realize that I'm Anthony Weiner. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the woman he got the text from. And this is why we have literature, and this is why we have famous people, and this is why that their foibles are so riveting to us. Because, you know, they're us.
So going forward into this, the sacred world that you talk about and sort of where evolution may be headed with this, then what does that feel like? I mean, do people actually act differently? Do they project differently? Do they accept more? I mean, for instance, one of the things you notice about any of us, I mean, either in ourselves or in our friends, we say, well, truth-telling is important, mm-hmm. right? So if someone's lying to me about anything or lying to them about anything, right. this can be very disruptive to the system that we all play in, but we do them, I mean, in varying degrees, sometimes maybe with the best intentions. Well, don't tell them that. So what does it feel like to you? I mean, for instance, 10 years ago, that if a politician was openly gay, would he have gotten elected?
Right.
Probably not.
No.
Yeah. So we see progress, I mean, in a way. But what would be the next ring of progress to you? What would be the markers that you would say, wow, actually, this is moving in an interesting way?
Well, I think that it's where we accommodate more and more of who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just what you said. I mean, there have been gay people for a long time. It's only now that gay people can be out and open, and not only out and open, but seen as role models and be elected and be, you know, held in high esteem. And that's huge progress in my lifetime. As we move forward, I think we're just going to see more of that. Young people who are listening to this, who are under 30, 40 years old, are probably going to live to be 120. They are. If we get the telomeres and some of the anti-aging stuff under control, God knows how long we'll live. I mean, it's just a whole new world. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be one partner forever? Maybe for some people that could be an absolutely glorious
sure.
way to live 150 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really could.
Yeah.
Most people are going to want to have sexual adventure, mm-hmm. sexual adventure throughout their lives. And whether, you know, we have containers whereby we have fidelity and monogamy while we raise kids, or we have serial monogamy, which seems to be my style. You know, when I'm with somebody, I'm faithful, and, you know, I've had 2 12-year relationships, and I'm glad for all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'll have another one. Mm-hmm. The big point, I think, and that you just said it, is it's honest.
Honesty.
We have a culture
exactly.
that can accommodate
right.
many different styles of living.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to hide about it mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. That's really, I mean, it's a cliche at this point, but it's so true. It's mm-hmm. not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the most excruciating part of this Anthony Weiner story was not that he Twittered a picture of himself in his underpants, but that he lied about it. Mm-hmm. And he threw other people under the bus.
Right.
And he right. prevaricated and, you know, that's
so that's the
it's
real
not the sex isn't the problem. It's
right.
the hypocrisy.
Right. Honesty, as best we can, and make our intentions clear, and then work that out with a variety of partners. And
yeah.
if that's where you're going, and then you may take some slings and arrows from the culture if they haven't quite caught up to you. But at least you can say, I do this from a place of integrity.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, when I talk about the sacred world to come, that's a thought experiment. That's an ideal that I use not as I think that it's anything that's going to happen anytime soon, but it's just a way of thinking about how ought we live? Who are we and what are we doing here and how ought we live? This is the basic existential question of humanity. And we see that the answer to that question has evolved. And it's evolved through a lot of troubles, you know, and a lot of disappointments and a lot of scandals and a lot of hurt and pain and suffering and, you know, destruction. But all of it has taken us forward. And so in our lifetimes, we're not going to solve this problem. We're going to deal with this problem. We're going to live this problem. And, you know, everybody listening to this gets to look at their lives, we all do, and say, how am I going to navigate this? Mm-hmm. This fact that I have this animal body. We've got this animal body that is the process of, you know, millions of years of erotic evolution. Even atoms wanted to have sex with each other and form molecules. I mean, we want to merge with each other. Sex is a spiritual act in the sense that for the moments that we're in sexual union with another person, we have lost ourselves. That is so utterly delicious. Thank God that we can't think our way out of that. You know, we're still in sort of a modernist, basically, default where we think that what we think is actually what we do. It's not. And this is where I think there's a certain evolutionary potency to hypocrisy, is that at least, you know, hypocrisy allows us to have a secret life. Thank God, because that's often what's moving us forward. So we, you know, we look at our lives and we see, how are we going to navigate this? And yet I see this person that I'm in love with and I want to share my life with and I want to have children and I am having children and we're having a life. And how do I make that so that it has some semblance of sanity and security? These are not questions that have easy answers. These are questions that actually the only answer is to practice, you know, to be conscious and aware and honest and ruthless and faithful to the practice itself. So that we can, you know, move this ball forward.
Well, certainly we will have plenty of chance to practice. Because as you point out, this is not going away. And it's not going away in our lives, and it's not going away in the culture in terms of when we just get fascinated with these train wrecks.
Right. Right.
So we're going to have plenty of chance to practice going forward. But this has been great, Jeff, just to kind of, you know, jump into this almost weekly occurrence now, but this latest one, and then really look at that in terms of the larger cultural context. And then that real sort of interesting question is, what's spirit up to here?
Right.
Right. So that's a good place to hold it for today. And we'll hope the audience reflects on it and writes in and lets us know how you guys are dealing with
it. Yeah, and we can see it moving in real time. Yeah. And how fascinating it all is. Yeah. You know, and again, I don't know if I've ended these conversations before with a statement, but where I end up with is I see something like that, the Wiener press conference, and, you know, all of this is just, God bless us all. You know, we're all here doing the best we can, and it is not about getting it right as much as it is about just practicing, you know, and being faithful to our own, you know, selves and to each other.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
And we'll
talk
to you next week.
Fun.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.